Hello once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
And welcome back to the broadcast podcast that features goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, the tech news you can use. That's right, we are analog, living in a digital world. We're in our makeshift studio that we are very graciously has been loaned to us by KLXR Radio's Mike Quinn. Thank you, Mike.
So. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mike.
Maybe we'll get him to loan us, you put our show on one of these days. Anyway.
He might go for that.
We might. You can, of course, download the podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Play Store. So, lots of stories this week, and if you are listening to the broadcast in Redding, California, we don't have to tell you it is ridiculously hot this week.
All along the West Coast, it's ridiculously hot.
In fact, we're kind of used to some of the temperatures that we've had here. I mean, they're never fun, but we, you know, 110 is not unusual for us in the summertime, but I feel sorry for the people in places like Medford, Oregon, all up through the Willamette
Portland.
Valley, and Portland, that have had unusually high temperatures for them, and that usually comes with a little more humidity there, and it's just miserable for those folks.
Mm-hmm.
We put up with 100, 105 for periods of time here in Redding all the time. This is a very common thing for us.
With 0% humidity.
No, it's not zero, but
practically.
It's about 10 or 15%.
It gets down there in the where swamp coolers work. I have friends across the country who I talk to on a virtual world. You go, what is a swamp cooler? And I explain it. They go, it'll never work.
No, it'll never work there.
Yeah, right? When I lived out in Illinois, and everyone's like, what's a swamp cooler? Yeah. Oh, right.
The dew points are way too high.
Yeah, they definitely have their issues. So hopefully the heat will ease up before the entire electrical grid collapses here in Northern California.
For those that live locally, since June 17th, and it's now, as we record this, August 3rd?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
We've had only 5 days of with high temperatures less than 100 degrees.
You really know how to hurt a guy.
Yeah, I know. But in my profession, I can see the end of when it might be coming. For a while there, I was so depressed because there was no end in sight. But triple digits will probably be with us for another week.
Mm-hmm.
And then it should cool off.
Yep.
See, that's what air conditioning's for.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Well, that's climate control. But when it cools off outside, your air conditioning works much better in the house.
Yep.
And then you also don't have to pay quite as much for your energy as or your cooling energy as well.
And now, I have on my phone, I think I still have it on my phone, an app that lets me check my thermostat at home and see what it's doing. In fact, it came in kind of handy. When we were on a trip and we discovered that the person was looking over the house.
It kind of had things cranked up a little
bit. Yeah, had the AC cranked way too high. So we actually went in and turned it back where we thought it should be. So
yeah, hey, and they never changed it.
Don't put it to 60, bud. Huh?
Yeah. No, we didn't do that. I think it was cranked up to 75, and we're like, don't think so.
Yeah, you're not paying the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of internet-connected things, here's one for you. And then Brenda's got an interesting story about the Internet of Things. You can now pay your money to buy, just because somebody really felt it was necessary, a smart salt shaker.
What?
Yes, you can control the salt shaker with your smartphone or an Amazon Echo. Probably because, according to this article in The Verge, we want to turn everything we can get our hands on into a smart device. Called the Smalt.
For smart salt dispenser,
yes,
apparently.
The smart salt shaker can also play music through a Bluetooth speaker.
What?
I wish I was making this up. Offers multicolored mood lighting. And lastly, but perhaps most importantly, since it is a salt shaker,
it actually dispenses salt.
It can actually dispense salt in any amount you choose via a connected app.
Okay.
Wait, hold on. I can't just pick it up
and
shake salt out of it. In what way is this a salt shaker then?
It's an Indiegogo project. So far, 51 people have backed this thing on Indiegogo.
I shake my head at the shaker.
See, those people are not smart.
These are people who think that a $199 connected salt shaker is a good thing.
Okay.
But if you back it on Indiegogo, and look, it's called the Smalt, it will only cost you $99.
There you go. So it supposedly is a good value, right? So a couple of things come to mind right away.
Can't make this up.
Analog is much better in this case, I am quite sure. But why does it have to be such a fancy schmancy salt delivery
because
system?
Because they can!
I guess, but that just seems awkward. That's just crazy. Now, you and
pass
I...
Pass me the salt and the cell phone.
When you and I have been to Consumer Electronics Show, and we see things like this at the show, we go, I don't think that's going to go very far. This one comes into that category. Yeah. We've learned that we're... I don't mean this arrogantly, that we seem to have this sense of what makes sense and what doesn't, and this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, there's this obsession...
Novelty item.
Connected things. You know, you've got the refrigerator with the TV camera inside it because, by golly, it's just too much trouble to open the door. Now, that's touted as an energy-saving device, but I will warrant that whatever energy you have saved by not opening the door is eaten up by the big-ass flat screen on the door.
Well, there's that, and the... Not only that, my refrigerator, when it gets full of lettuce and vegetables and things, you can't see anything
in
there.
And the resource cost of building the screen onto the thing used more energy than that thing would ever save.
Yeah, and what happens if the operating system crashes and all your food dies? Come on.
We're just too old school, I guess.
So
that's good
some
stuff.
People think that anything that can be connected to the internet for whatever wild reason should be connected to the internet, but in the vast, wild, wacky world of internet-connected things, internet of things, there are problems.
Absolutely. I came across this missive, if you will, from, believe it or not, the FBI. Yes, the FBI.
That's a wrong
That was
theme.
Dragnet.
Yeah, that's
well,
Dragnet.
Same kind of idea,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't remember the theme from FBI, but
I do vaguely.
You'll have to look that one up.
Da 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 da. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The FBI. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Quentin Martin Productions.
Uh huh.
I'm dating myself.
Yes. I didn't watch television quite like that. So if you're a child, grandchild, whatever, child in your life, niece, nephew, what have you, wants one of these fancy toys that is essentially a smart toy. It's internet connected. Mm-hmm. So it's an IoT toy, Internet of Things toy.
Right.
They typically have sensors, microphones, cameras, data storage components, other multimedia capabilities, including speech recognition and GPS options, meaning it knows where it is.
Now there was a big story.
Track your kid,
and there was a story about the Barbie that had a television camera in it, right?
I vaguely remember that,
or it had a microphone at the very least.
Right. So these features are definitely in the realm of putting the privacy and safety of children at risk, because a lot of personal information can be unwittingly disclosed. Because a lot of times they have an app or some kind of thing on the web where in order to have an interaction, maybe between the toys and other kids would have the same toy or the child and the toy, you have to have an account.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, the functionality and the features on the different toys vary tremendously. But in some cases, toys with microphones could record and collect conversations within earshot of the device. And that was like the Barbie and such like that you were talking about, Bob. Child's name, maybe their school, maybe something about their dislikes and likes. All of this stuff could be collected.
Yeah, where does this data go?
Exactly. So even date of birth, pictures, address, all of that kind of personal information could end up in these accounts. And that's a very common thing when you create accounts online with this sort of thing.
And it barely needs to be recorded anywhere if somebody's actively listening to it.
Well,
it all goes into a humongous database.
Exactly, because then what happens is the companies that collect this data, they actually can sell it, and it is a source of revenue. And there's also such information, believe it or not, this could create opportunities for child identity fraud. Mm. Why on earth would you need child identity fraud?
Because social security accounts can be open.
Yeah. Any kind of social program that could be without, that's crazy.
Medical fraud.
Or what about kidnapped kids could take be given another identity? I mean, I just thought of that. That wasn't in the article, but wow, that's just crazy. So what they're suggesting is that if you're going to get one of these toys, take a look at the toy company user agreement disclosures and privacy practices. That horrible, ugly thing that nobody wants to read because it's in legalese, and if you don't check I agree or I've read it, then you can't use the device.
Yeah, or the app.
But take a look at it and see what's going on, including if the data is sent to third-party services. That's kind of a bit of a red flag there.
Which they almost always are.
Oh, yeah. That's often the case. So, security safeguards are often overlooked by the manufacturer in their rush to get them to market, so they don't have very good security elements.
Right, there was a whole bunch of cameras. Yeah, that had
hackable
crap
or whatever.
Security.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they make these things and pay no attention to security whatsoever.
And one thing they don't add here is what about there being malware loaded on it out of the factory that can get into your computer. I could see that as a possibility
especially
as well.
Especially where, not to cast any aspersions, but, gee, the People's Republic of China.
Yep. It's crazy. There may be even things like passwords and home addresses, Wi-Fi information, and things like that collected through some of these devices, in that particularly if they have some sort of recording, verbal voice recording type of thing. And you know, the data or whatever is used is not necessarily protected by digital certificates or any kind of encryption or any kind of security in that way. So smart toys generally connect to the internet in one of two ways, directly through Wi-Fi or an internet-connected wireless access point, or indirectly, which is via Bluetooth or an Android or iOS device that's connected to the internet. And via an app, I think, is what they're kind of talking about there. And so, you know, I can't imagine that there's too many of these companies that are encrypting that data, because that's expensive. It takes takes time to do that. So there's actually laws, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, that puts requirements on website and online operators directed to children under the age of 13. They're supposed to help with these things. So, you know, how do you protect yourself from this kind of thing, and what do you do? You want to research. Look for any known reported security issues. Only connect and use the toys and environments with trusted and secure Wi-Fi internet access. More research. Research where the user data is stored. Carefully read the disclosures. That's an element there. If a company has been victimized by cyber attack and your data has been exposed, what will the company do to notify you or to assist you? And, of course, monitor the child's activity with the toys. I'm sure some of them have, you know, in-app purchases and things like that you might want to avoid. And, as always, any kind of security with usernames and passwords, you want to use really strong ones for that, just like you would any other device. And so I found this article interesting because, I mean, these are kids.
Yep.
And this level of having to monitor and maintain and understand the technology of how these things work is now at that level. I think there's something to be said for giving the kid a box of Legos.
Yeah.
With no electronics attached to it whatsoever.
And a box of crayons and some blank
absolutely.
Paper.
Absolutely. Analog is sometimes the best fun.
Well, speaking of being tracked and devices you can have attached to your house, you can also have devices attached to you, according to an article in the New York Post. And we've heard about this company that they offer their employees microchips to be placed just like chipping your pet. The microchip goes between the thumb and forefinger, and it lets you open doors, get into your office, log into your computer.
Buy stuff from vending machines.
Several people were offered the chance. A few declined, but a bunch of them took it. So, you know, the Borg thing is sort of coming along. And British inventor Steve Northam says that he says there's nothing scary about a future where we're all fitted with cybernetic implants.
Right. Until the boss can check up where you actually are. You know, this is a company-sponsored thing. You take a sick day. Well, did you stay home or did you go to the movie or you know, were you out on the lake and just couldn't be bothered to come to work?
With social media, people give that away in these days anyway.
Well, they're idiots if they do, but I used to do that. I'd hide out when I was playing hooky at work. I've done that a few times, especially on graveyard shifts. There were always young, eager beavers that were willing to take the OT, and I just, oh my gosh, I took mental health days. Yeah. And I would stay home because the town was small and I didn't want to be seen in town playing hooky, so I'd stay home and relax.
So Alan's got a story about a popular device that wears on your wrist rather than in your hand.
Well, at least it's just on, not in.
Yeah, it's not implanted.
You know Fitbits?
Oh yeah. They were really big for it. Fitbit almost became
wearables.
A verb. Yeah.
Because they're supposed to wear them and you're supposed to, you know, encourage you to do exercise and all that good stuff.
Yeah, Fitbits sort of become like Kleenex when it comes to fitness trackers.
Well, the Brunel University in London did a study on Fitbits on teens. They had them wear them and then tracked about how much exercise they did. And they found that at the beginning, it did encourage people to do all the exercise it asked it to do, you know, 10,000 steps a day, all that. And as time wore on, though, unfortunately, these requirements or goals that the Fitbit had for these people to do were arduous. And the
people started saying, to hell with this.
Yeah.
No thing is going to tell me what to do, right?
So they would actively discourage people from, like, exercising just because the amount that this thing wanted them to do was ridiculous in their minds. And they found that people that didn't have them did more exercise in general than ones that did.
You see, this is the problem with social engineering, that when the benign government wants to say, you can't have that 32-ounce drink, people are going, I've never had a 32-ounce drink in my life, but I'm going to buy one just because you told me I couldn't.
Right. So all these, yeah, it's just interesting.
People are ornery that way.
Yeah, and so the kids just felt like there was no way they could keep up with the demands of the stupid thing. And you can't actually change the settings on it.
Ah.
At least this version they were using, they couldn't set like a goal of steps or, you know, miles walked or whatever else.
Yeah, my Samsung phone has a fitness app on it, and it nags me if I don't make the goal, and I get kind of mad at it, you know?
Right? You're like, I don't... shut up. I don't care. No. So it's... The study actively proved that it actively discourages at least teens in this one.
Well, most of these things end up in a drawer anyway within 6 months.
Right. But since they were part of the study, you know, the kids actually wore the things. That was part of their goals to do for this. They didn't have to follow it if they didn't want to, but they did have to wear it whenever they were out and about.
Mm-hmm. Article from Nerdist. By the way, all the stuff that talk about here, we have curated the articles that gave us the ideas and put them on the BoomerTech Radio magazine. Which is in the Flipboard app. You can get Flipboard. Now, these people aren't paying us any money. It'd be nice if they did. Flipboard is an app for iOS, Android, and PC, which doesn't work real well, but you can get onto Flipboard on your PC. But it's real good. If you got a 12-inch iPad Pro, oh, baby, Flipboard looks just great. And Brenda has it on her Android.
Yep, I like it.
Anyway, the article talks about, Alan, what is the mainstay of Japanese anime? If there's one appendage that appears over and over in anime, it would be, of course, the tentacle.
Or the large eyeball.
Yeah, the Japanese have this thing for tentacles.
I like tentacles.
Yeah, well, it's really...
You always freak out when I eat the octopus or, squid tentacles. They are a little chewy.
Article that appears in Nerdist. Prosthetic arms, of course, are made to look like our normal arms, but do they have to?
No, and I've often said I wish I was an octopus some days because I need like four arms, and tentacles are such practical appendages.
Yeah. As long as they're prehensile, yeah.
There is actually being worked on a backpack that turns you into Dr. Octopus.
They're very flexibility, so
the
and
extra
taper
appendages
makes them flexible.
The extra appendages would not have to be fingered arms. They could be tentacles which could wrap around an item and hold it in place while your hands are doing the detail work.
Or it wraps around the bar on a door and so you can pull it open or something like that.
Now, you don't want to get into an argument with somebody who's sporting a couple of tentacles.
Probably not. That could be crazy.
Can it let me climb walls?
Probably, yeah, that would be nice.
Well, I don't know. This prototype that's on here looks like a jointed dinosaur tail.
Now, if you're a fan of the TV show Futurama, the animated show Futurama, they often feature tentacles as on some of their characters. Researcher named Kylene Cow says that this could be a replacement arm. She's a student at the... she developed the arm when she was an undergraduate at University of Washington. Was that not...
Yay, my alma mater.
Your alma mater. Okay, that explains a lot. She's showing the prosthetic. She says it got mixed reviews. Some people saw, hey, this is really cool. And other people went, ew.
Oh, I think it's interesting. You think about it, your fingers are mini tentacles. They wrap around things.
They just don't have a lot of points of articulation.
Yeah, well, so does this thing. It's got lots of joints in it so that it can curl up into a tight, like an elephant trunk. It can wrap around things. I think it's cool.
Yeah. So real quick, before the bottom of the hour break, you know, we've been kind of keeping an eye on, you know, if you're in California living to this, listening to this podcast, you're aware of the huge debacle that is the not-so-fast rail.
The regular speed train.
the sometimes slightly faster than a normal train.
The train
rail.
Between two points that people
nobody wants to
go there. You know, why would you go from one to the other?
Or how to blow $62 billion and really get nothing done.
And why would you ever try to make a fast train between L.A. and San Francisco that goes through the Central Valley? Yeah. Excuse me? That's just crazy.
Meanwhile, our very own answer to Iron Man, Elon Musk, he came up with the idea of course, what's called the Hyperloop. Now, he's not developing it. He open sourced the ideas and the diagrams and things, and different companies are figuring out how to make it work. Well, Hyperloop 1 has been running tests out in the Nevada desert, and ultimately this thing's going to move like 600 plus miles an hour, but it has a test pod has reached 192 miles an hour.
That's amazing.
That's a pretty good clip.
Yeah. Yep, and then I think one of their... they had a much smaller trolley that they put through there, and it was going around 70 miles an hour. And the picture they have in here, this thing is
it looks
the
like
size of a bus, kind of.
It looks like a really big torpedo from Star Trek.
In a way, it does, yeah. One of those really big tubes you see at the bank, the pneumatic tubes at Costco. They have those at some Costcos have had those.
Yeah, so...
That's amazing. I think it's kind of cool. I mean...
you can bury this thing under the ground or run it down an existing median of a freeway, elevated, and have stops whenever you need it. And this seems to be... And it's a lot less energy than this train that won't really work.
Well, because it's hovering above its track, you know, magnetized
friction.
Up, so it's got very little to no friction.
Right, and it's moving in a tube that's had the air evacuated out.
Right, it's a pressure, it's an anti-pressurized tube.
So they're going to have to build, yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
There would be exit points at you know, just like, people travel in the BART system under the bay all the time. And
right.
Anyway, that's the bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back. It's Boomer Deck Radio with Bob, Brenda, and Alan. More after this.
I'd go on a Hyperloop ride. No problem.
Welcome back, Boomer Tech Radio, with Bob, Brenda, and Alan, and the tech news you can use. Well, we certainly hope you can use some things coming up in the next couple of weeks. Of course, the solar eclipse.
Oh yeah, it's
the big one.
Yeah, big eclipse.
There's already now. There's stories in the major media about it, and if you're into science and tech, you kind of have to have been hiding under a rock lately to not know about this for some time. And I've been looking up sites. We're going to go see it.
Yes.
Hopefully, it's not cloudy.
Just outside of Salem, Oregon, which has got a prime spot.
Yep. So we're working on finding a group of folks to hide out with. And I have a lead on that. If not, I'm okay with the side of the road. It really doesn't bother me. So I'll have to figure out if it's going to be cloudy or not. And even if it looks like it might be cloudy or just partly cloudy, I say go for it anyway.
Now, I'm going to post the link to this excellent interactive map that will show you the path of totality. But when you tap a spot on the map, it will calculate the exact time and the duration, and whether you'll see a total or an annular, or not an annular, a total or a partial eclipse, and how long that lasts. Well, anywhere in the country, because this thing traverses the entire width of the United States. But the actual path...
48 states.
48 states.
Yes.
But the path of totality is only 60 miles across.
A point of geography... I have to rant about this because we see this all the time.
Contiguous.
Yeah, you see continental United States all the time. Alaska is in the North American continent.
Isn't Hawaii technically part of the North American continent also?
That's a good question. I am not totally sure about that one, but if you mean the contiguous 48 states, you know, corner to corner, Washington to Florida, you know, Maine to California... Say contiguous states. It is not the continental United States. That drives me crazy.
Contiguous.
Anyway, if you visit boomertechradio.com, I will give you this website because it's impossible to mention over the air because...
It's an awesome one.
Yeah.
Could you give some hints?
xjubier.free.fr. So I think it's a French site.
Ah. Frenchies.
Yeah. and the rest of it's just, but it puts it on a, it superimposes the path on a Google map that then when you tap the map, I have it on my tablet. When you click the map, it gives you, start of partial, start of total, maximum eclipse, end of total.
Excellent data. Yeah. It's really nice. It's got a metadata table for whatever location it is that you're picking on.
So now, if you're going to watch the eclipse, spend $20 and get the glasses. Or if you want to splurge, you can spend about $50 or $60 and get binoculars with solar filters on them that then you can take the filters off and use them as...
You got those on sale.
Yeah.
So they were $60.
Yeah, about $60, and they mount on a tripod.
Yeah, you got a smoking deal on that. Yeah. That was from what company?
It was through Amazon.
Through Amazon, I thought it was B&H or somebody like that that actually had them.
Actually, you're right. Yeah, B&H did have those.
Yeah.
What's cool about the total solar, then you want to get the glasses so you can see it coming and going.
Yes. Though,
is when it's fully done, you can actually look at it for a little bit straight with your
eyeballs. You have 2 minutes that you can look at it without blowing your eyes
about
out of the back
minutes.
Of your head. Yeah.
And if you've never seen a solar eclipse... you've seen pictures of them, but they always look very black and white.
It's hard to capture this.
It's extremely difficult.
Thing that it looks like.
The colors are much richer than that. The shadow is kind of a very deep midnight blue. It's not black. That is the
moon.
The moon is the back of the moon because of course there's light reflected off.
It's
the
reflection
Earth.
Of Earthlight.
It's
funny
beautiful.
To make sure you know, it's still the front of the moon.
Well, that's true.
We only see one side.
It's true. You're right. If we want to get picky, the moon itself, what is at that time the dark side of the moon, which is the side that always faces the Earth, and then the corona of the sun is kind of a creamy colored. Whitish yellow. It's not white. It's not bright white like that at all. And it does get dark, but it doesn't get dark like the middle of the night dark, because most places where you are, the path of totality is not the entire sky really, and regular sunlight will leak around that edge of that shadow or whatever.
Right. The rest of the sky is still just as blue.
Exactly.
It's just the big
shadow.
Big bright spot's not there.
Exactly. And it's an amazingly beautiful thing. It just is so interesting. No wonder the ancients freaked out. because
well,
of course
it's weird.
It is very weird, and if you're in not in the path of totality, but you're a very high percentage, the light gets really strange.
Yeah. Well, we had an annular here a couple of years ago, and yeah, it was still bright, but you knew something was wrong.
Yeah, it's just dulled. It's almost like having the kind of sunlight you get when it's really smoky or something like that.
Anyway, we will post the website on boomertechradio.com along with the show notes and links to download the show to your device to listen to at your leisure. Now, speaking of things astronomical, if you live in Northern California and within the range of the broadcast, you can actually, there's a event coming up.
Well, the broadcast is only like in town, but if you're in the greater Reading area, or you love astronomical things, you have a little bit of time, hopefully, to plan for this on Friday, August 11th, Saturday, August 12th, and Sunday, August 13th of this year. That would be next weekend from those that are listening on the Saturday show. At Lassen Volcanic National Park, they are going to have a series of lectures and star viewings, and they have a telescope for they have a solar telescope during the day as well. And the two main venues for this are the Manzanita Lake Campground, is kind of on the north side, and the I don't know how to say this Kayamani something like that visitor center, which is near the main park headquarters on the southwest side, and Manzanita Lake is kind of on the northwest side. And then there's Highway 89 that goes through the park, which is open, as I understand it.
Finally,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and they also have some activities at the Bumpus Hell Trailhead area, which there's a big parking lot there.
That's a very high altitude.
Bumpus Hell itself is a very interesting place, but there's mud pots right there you can see from the very short walk from the parking lot. But at any rate, they have lectures from NASA folks and a local person, and it, you know, some of the titles that are out there, exploring Mars for habitable environments and life, and so they have little movies and things like that. There's all kinds of things going on, and they have a big art and science fair, a lot of kids' activities, and then telescope viewing at night, because the great thing about Lassen is that in this part of the country is that we don't have a lot of light pollution.
Right.
And the dark sky projects or folks are, you know, very concerned about that. In fact, if you've ever been to Hilo, Hawaii, they have very strange street lights that change the color of everything.
Well, around Mount Palomar in San Diego County.
So you don't have the light pollution interfering with the telescope. Yeah. It was very bizarre. I got into Hilo one evening, and I went into a store while it was still daylight, and I was in there a while, and I came out, and it had turned dark, and all the street lights were on, and I couldn't find my car because
It
was the wrong color.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually had to think about where I actually parked. And when I got to it, it's like, okay, was that it? And I had to look inside. Yeah, that's my stuff. It was really weird.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like I said, they have these special lights in there. It's a low pressure sodium. Mm-hmm.
They're very yellow.
Yeah, it's a very odd yellow light. So it's
very interesting. That was quite an experience.
Yeah.
Anyway, all things astronomical at Lassen Volcanic National Park.
Very cool.
August 11th through 13th, including star parties in the evenings and solar telescopes and mini programs. It looks kind of cool.
Will there be any actual stars there, like Hollywood ones?
No.
God,
those
I hope not.
The sky.
No, those, we're talking astronomical ones, not human ones.
We went to a star party some years ago at Shingletown Airport. And what was really neat was we were looking through this huge telescope. This thing was a 24-inch reflector. You had to get on a stick.
Ladder.
The tube was 12 feet high.
Yeah.
You got on a ladder to look through the objective. And it was focused on this double star.
The blue gold double star.
Yeah. And it was the most amazing thing to see these
beautiful
colors.
Yeah. And if you can get in one, we used to have one on campus at college, and they'd open it up some summer night evenings. And so I had taken an astronomy class, and there in the textbook was like, oh, wow, there's the Horsehead Nebula. I mean, just like in the book.
Yeah.
Only it's much more vibrant looking at it.
And pictures
it
in books don't do it justice.
Mm-mm, definitely not.
Anyway, remember some months ago we talked about the misbehaving chatbot named Tay
who yes.
turned on her Microsoft handlers, and then of course last week we had the chatbots that pulled the Colossus and Guardian trick and started developing their own language. Well, it seems like the Chinese are having problems with their own chatbot issues, right?
This was a private one, at least. Tencent, which is a pretty big company over there, they do all sorts of games, internet. It'd be hard to like think of a English analog, but they'd be as big of a like name, I suppose, as you would think of Nintendo or something. They make mobile games mostly, but they do all sorts of technology things. Anyway, they made these chat bots. They called them Baby Q and Little Bing. They're just designed to talk to people. People talk to them, and they reciprocate, you know, like normal chatbots do. But they didn't really look too far into like how they would respond in when asked like some random questions. Like if you were to ask it, like, "Have you eaten today?" the bots would be saying, "I haven't eaten because I don't have an appetite," because, you know, they're chatbots or whatever. They're just trying to make funny little things for that. But they didn't... They're the type of chatbots that learn from talking, and the more you feed
it... Much like Tay, who eventually became a racist, profanity, foul-mouth little chatbot until they had to pull her plug.
Because they don't know any different.
Right.
So they... Some...
Formed by environment.
Some funny people over in China had nice long conversations with them and got them to start responding to political questions, which the Chinese government's not too fond of anything against the Communist Party.
Right, right.
So one user posted a comment that says, "Long live the Communist Party," and got a response from Baby Q asking, "Do you think that such a corrupt and incompetent political regime can live forever?"
My goodness. Isn't that relatively sophisticated for a chatbot?
They couldn't reach that plug fast enough, could they?
Who programmed that in?
That's just that somebody had told it that or responded to that a question similar that the chatbot had asked.
You know, some coder was sitting in a puddle of his own sweat, if not other things.
Another person asked Baby Q, "Is democracy good or not?" And the got reply, "There needs to be democracy," which the kinda Chinese government was just really not happy about that. Yeah. So eventually they got their plug pulled at the government's behest, and then Tencent will be working on them a little bit to either ignore or just plain not answer these particular
types of
questions.
This is what's known as a career-ending incident, if not worse. Oh, jeez.
Tencent's too big for them to, like, really hammer too badly. They get tons of money from all sorts
of... Yeah, but you know the specific engineer who wrote the softwares, probably, you know. Probably got some problems. Well, speaking of artificially intelligent, and let's call it what it is, machine learning. We do not have a sentient...
True. AI.
Yes. To the best of my knowledge...
Which is fortunate.
There does not yet exist a sentient operating system. But it was back on March 13th of 2004 that a bunch of engineers and spectators were watching some self-driving cars speed across the Mojave Desert in the very first DARPA Grand Challenge. I remember this story. DARPA, of course, is... It's sort of like the Pentagon's Skunk Works, which was the advanced airplane outfit. DARPA is the people who come up with all these crazy ideas. This was the very first push towards fully autonomous vehicles. The Army, DARPA, the Defense Department, wanted vehicles that they could set off on a mission without a human driver. Let's say you had an injured driver, or maybe the vehicle was carrying something particularly nasty. Wanted it to be able to maneuver through complicated terrain. Easy enough to get a vehicle that will follow a line or stay in its own lanes and things like that.
But getting it to drive around non-paved roads or around rocks or exploded roads or whatever is
correct.
A little more complicated.
As I recall, in that very first DARPA race, I think only one vehicle even got close to the finish line, and it didn't finish.
Hmm.
It was only
not much of a race then,
right? But it was so that's how far we've come. Now, of course, we've got we're not quite to fully capable self-driving cars, and I think it's going to be quite a while before we are.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too many variables. What happens if a kid chases a ball into the road? Does the car swerve to save the kid and possibly roll and kill the driver? If the kid is chasing the ball and
right.
there's a school bus next to
right.
you, suddenly this learning system has to figure out in a fraction of a second something that most of us certainly can't do. Decide, you know, somebody's going to die.
Fortunately, this is a very rare thing.
It is a rare thing.
But it does need to be
figured out. It's a hypothetical. Hypotheticals are the things that will bite you on the butt. So,
interesting how that problem is going to be solved. It'll be very interesting to see how that does.
On a similar thing, British auto insurance companies are having some issues with the automatic cars they're starting to introduce over there.
Because mm-hmm.
there's a big disparity between automatic and assisted driving.
Right.
A lot of people are getting these cars that are touted as automatic, and they're thinking that, you know, they're going to drive me from A to B, when they are a lot more limited than that. They've got, you know, prevents you from drifting out of lane. It's essentially like a really advanced cruise control.
Right.
Where you get it going, and then it'll just kind of keep you on the road.
You can't really take your hands off the wheel and have a sandwich or something.
Right. It's intended to, like I said, like a very advanced cruise control. It'll keep pace with the car in front of you. It won't slam into them. Some of them might even be able to switch lanes to pass somebody without your help. But they're not going to do a lot beyond that. And there's a whole bunch of different companies making a whole bunch of different types of these vehicles. And so they're having an issue as to what's automatic and what's assisted. And so the insurance companies over there in Britain are starting to lay out guidelines, be like, anything that doesn't meet this particular line right here, we're going to consider assisted. And it means for any insurance reasons or whatnot, people have to be there and paying attention the whole time while you're driving.
Right. And in the meantime, we've got legislation being written by politicians who are acting at the behest of the Teamsters Union, taxi drivers, folks like that, who have a vested interest in keeping their people employed for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these laws are so poorly crafted that it's really, look at what California did. Chased the
Uber, I think it was out of San Francisco.
Yeah,
chased them
out completely. And now San Francisco, of course, has banned robots on sidewalks making deliveries.
No delivery robots, because, you know, them going 2 miles an hour might kill somebody, I guess. Something like that.
Yeah, so be careful about, you know, And of course, the story comes back about the British law that required that a motor car be preceded by a servant waving a flag, because the motor cars of the day were noisy and dangerous and would spook the horses. So, and they could only go about 4 miles an hour.
Right.
So you had somebody who walked in front waving a flag as this clunky clunk thing came through town, but it was a law on the books.
Everyone had their servant to wave in front of them, mm-hmm. didn't they? Yeah. Well, if you owned a car, you did anyway.
Exactly. If you could afford a car back, this is like 1880 something.
Yeah, only few people had that sort of thing.
Windows. Microsoft has come up with a built-in eye tracking feature.
I think that's been there for a while, hasn't it? It just hasn't been like activated.
Well, or the preview build included a beta support. There is it's called a Tobii, T-O-B-I-I, eye tracker. And why would you want to be able to do all this stuff with your eyes? Well, maybe you're mobility impaired, or mm-hmm. maybe you are in an environment where you are handling stuff that you don't want to transfer onto the keyboard. You want to be able to make a note or activate a program simply by looking at the just like the gun that you could point at a screen, and it would put a cursor on the screen. This camera looks at your eye, figures out where you're looking, and puts the cursor there. And you can actually type on the screen by blinking.
Also would be pretty useful for people with no arms or limited mobility or all sorts of different things. If it's good enough.
How much better would that have been for Stephen Hawking, for instance, than the system that he had to use, which was far more awkward?
Yeah, a little weird there, but everyone got used to him, at least.
I had the privilege of going to a lecture of his, which, of course, was like pre-recorded at one time, and I was like third from last in the door.
No.
I barely got in. It was pretty awesome being in the same room with the man.
So, to wrap it up here... two of your favorite things, Alan. Now, I know you're a fan, not as bad as your sister, is a fan of anime, which is, of course, Japanese animation based on manga, which are the comic books, although they do not bear a lot of resemblance to what we would think of as a comic book. They are graphic novels.
Well, there's pictures and there's word bubbles and all that good stuff.
And they're written backwards.
Yeah.
Japanese animation has exploded in popularity in the past couple of years. Guess what, guys? It's been a lot longer than that. I was watching this stuff 25 years ago.
It's gotten notably more popular, though.
Of course, Crunchyroll, Hulu, and Amazon, of course, have added to the popularity. Now, Funimation, which is a company which has made a lot of money by taking Japanese-produced animation and translating it into English, often hiring big-name talent to do the voiceovers, has launched its own service. Now Sony has taken a 95% majority stake in Funimation and is going to incorporate it into the PS4.
Yep, it'll be an anime machine, essentially.
The company takes whatever steps it needs to get the show ready for Western distribution. They'll either subtitle it or dub it in English. In the past, this mostly meant VHS and Blu-ray.
Whoa, VHS and Blu-ray, huh?
Yeah, those were the days. I actually had some of those. But some of them got onto cable networks like Adult Swim, but now streaming companies mean that that pipeline has gotten a whole lot bigger. In fact, Netflix is starting to commission their own animation, the Japanese studios, to create animation for them.
They recently had Castlevania.
Castlevania.
Which was actually, hold on here, it's an anime commissioned by Netflix based on a video game.
On a video
series.
Game. Castlevania was one of the early PC video games.
Now, those are the three nerdy things all rolled into one.
Yeah, Castlevania, which was, I think, Nazis and vampires. And
I don't think there were Nazis, and it was mostly just vampires and whatnot.
Okay, maybe. No, Wolfenstein was is the one that had the Nazis in it.
Yeah, Castlevania was just a guy with a whip and running around killing, and not killing vampires. They weren't vampires themselves, generally, but anyway.
Yeah. And, of course, Doom came along, which changed the whole industry. So I understand they're going to do another remake on Doom. The question is why.
Well, they just made one.
Yeah, it maybe that's yeah.
Pretty
that's,
popular. Yeah. Recently.
Well, of course, the one with the Rock in it was pretty bad.
Oh no! They made a new actual game called Doom, and it's a first person shooter, and it's all the modern stuff, and it was pretty critically well received, and yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for this hour of Boomer Tech Radio. If you're listening to the podcast, you'll hear a slight break, and then we will be back. If you're listening to the live show, you will hear top of the hour news, and then our second hour of Boomer Tech Radio, Bob and Brenda and Alan saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other. Hello, once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program that gives you goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, tech news you could use. And we are here each and every week. Welcome to our second hour. And if you're listening on the air and you missed part of the show, of course, you can go to boomertechradio.com and download our podcast. Also, look at show notes. We've got some links up on that page. Or you can go to iTunes, Apple Play, or Apple Play. Yeah, there's a mix-up. iTunes, Google Play, or TuneIn Radio, or Stitcher. So we're all over the place. Speaking of streaming music services, an article in Gizmodo, pretty funny, about You know, we've mentioned a couple times about SoundCloud, which was a service where a lot of podcasters would place their shows, but also you can put your own compositions or custom mixes up on this service.
That was the attraction.
It was popular also because users could add comments on particular seconds of a broadcast
or whatever.
So there was more of a social aspect available to it.
Well, SoundCloud is sinking. They've taken out $40 million or $70 million in debt funding to try to stay up, but they were backed originally by venture capitalists, but they're still struggling. It looks like they do not have a workable model, and the company is probably going to fail sometime this month.
Like most things, you have to have a way to actually make money to stay around, and a lot of big companies are struggling with this, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. Right. But they're keeping big just on being big.
Yeah, yeah, they've got enormous reserves. SoundCloud lost $55 million for the year.
Whoops.
That's pretty big money. Was it real money?
Yeah, it was real money, investor money. So SoundCloud is probably going to go the way of RDO, Grooveshark, Moog, and other failed music services. Streaming services, the big shakeout is happening right now. There's been a whole bunch of them, so we're going to look for look at some of the streaming services that were really heavily promoted, had some big names behind them, and now are fading off. Pono Music, which looks like porno music, Neil Young actually had his very own music player.
Is that a true genre of music? Porno music.
Neil Young had a music player. It was very badly designed. It had an accompanying online store from which owners could buy high-resolution music. When Neil Young released his single in 2016 called... it doesn't give the title of the song. He released a single in May of 2016. But he already knew that his own company was dying, and so it wasn't even released to his own company.
Whoops.
In July, the company announced that the Pono music store is going offline as it switched to a new source for content. A year later, it is still gone. So those who invested in Pono players... The music player doesn't appear to be for sale. Right now it is. Looks like it's sinking slowly into the sunset.
And not sinking like your iPod.
Right. So we talked about SoundCloud. Tidal is another music streaming service. Now, this was backed by rapper Jay-Z, and he relaunched it back in 2015. For 2 years, the company's been going through CEOs. They've had lawsuits, late with payments to indie labels. Tidal may hold on for a bit longer, but probably their numbers are way down, so they're not looking good. And this one, what brought me up to this was because I had for nearly 10 years, Brenda, a Rhapsody, which later became Napster, account.
Yes.
Now, the only resemblance between the current Napster and the Napster that everybody remembers that was famous was the name. Napster, of course, was the original music sharing service. They got sued down into the dirt. All their assets were sold off. But they had a cute logo, the cat logo, cat with headphones logo.
Oh, yeah, that was that? Very cute.
Rhapsody, which, of course, was a spinoff of Real Networks, bought Napster and started doing their music service. However, they have never let go of Flash as their music player of choice.
Flash.
Yes. Well, since we have Mac computers here at the radio station, Macs no longer play nice with Flash.
Modern
you have to
Windows.
Force them to.
Yeah, that's,
modern window computers don't play well with Flash anymore.
Yep, that's true.
They'll get them to run, but it's very, very mad at you if you tell it to do anything for Flash.
Right. So the whole thing. Now, let's face it. Rhapsody, Napster, they really paved the way for things like Spotify, Apple Music, places like that. Rhapsody was the first subscription service that licensed streaming music from all the major label groups. The company has struggled. They're down to just 3.5 million paying subscribers, and Amazon Music is just kicking their butt.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, and Rhapsody everything. Wasn't bad.
No. But their catalogs were getting smaller, and the final straw for me was when their Flash player quit working on our Macs here at the radio station.
Yep, yeah, it's good enough.
Yeah,
see you later.
Yep. Pandora, which of course is a major name, but they're hurting. They have their last financial statement looked pretty bad. It's a public company, but they do have about 81 million active users. Problem is that the users aren't making the company any money because they're all signed up for the free part of the service, not the premium service.
That's me.
Hello.
Even listen to the commercials because I block them, so I'm like an extra bad leech to them.
Well, it could be that all of Pandora's assets and user base will be bought up by one of the companies that is going to survive.
That being?
Well, we will talk about that. Probably, my bet would be Amazon.
Oh, gotcha.
Will buy their user base.
So it's not known yet, necessarily.
Yeah. You know, when it goes away, then there'll be buyers for it, at least.
Deezer isn't a well-known streaming company in the U.S., but it has 6 million users across the globe. They were gonna they were gonna launch out of France. They raised over $100 million in startup money, but the company hasn't made any layoffs. They're kind of hanging in there, but they're not posting any profits either. Groove Music, that was Microsoft's. Groove Music appears to be going the way of the Zune player. They have Microsoft's backing, so there's plenty of money behind it. If Microsoft decides it is bored with doing its own music streaming service, they could simply shut it down. And like I said, it'll be like having a Zune player, which was one of the funnier parts of Guardians of the Galaxy Chapter 2. Or book 2,
Volume
2.
Yes, that was. That was
the
quite
Zune
amazing.
Player.
Yes.
Everybody's got one.
It's the most popular thing on earth.
Now, it's getting better as it goes along here. iTunes is still doing okay. Really, they're the ones who just launched. Now, iTunes is not technically a streaming service. It's a music purchasing service. But they have... offered streams of your playlists, and I bet that Apple Music and iTunes will be merged together into a single entity before too much more time goes by.
No reason why they shouldn't be, really.
Popular and likely to survive, of course, mostly because of the depth of the pockets, Google Play Music. Now, we've got... I don't think I have a subscription to Google Play. I've got Amazon Music. Which, of course, is sitting on Amazon Music number one. It's not number one, but Amazon Music number is high up on the list, as is iHeartRadio. Now, iHeartRadio's claim to fame is that they're tied in with some of the most largest radio stations in the country.
I listen to them regularly.
Do you?
Just listen to live radio for places, things I can't get nearby.
And then, of course, there's Spotify, which, of course, has very... real business problems, but they're hanging on there. The sheer weight and the number of people behind them will probably help Spotify hang in there and survive.
Well, it's extremely well known, too. That's another big big point in its favor.
Right,
lots
right.
of people use
it's
it.
It's probably the best known streaming music service.
Yeah.
Do any of them make money, per se?
Starting to.
Either subscribers or ads interjected here and there between your song choices.
But the shakeout is going. So, anyway, there it is, rundown of, but like I said, the ones that are gone are RDO, Grooveshark, Beats Music. Apple bought Beats and just pretty much gutted them. Mog was...
was that one of those attempts at... eliminating the competition by buying them out?
Yeah, pretty much, or just undercutting them until they die. Then, also mentions Milk Music. If you bought an Android device, you had an icon on it that you had no idea what the hell it was for, called Milk Music. Samsung was trying to launch their own music service. It never got traction. It never really picked up any listeners and finally shut down in 2016.
With a total active user base of 2.
Yes. Sony had an unlimited music service. They crashed and burned. And even country superstar Garth Brooks, who allegedly hated streaming music, tried to launch his own service called Ghost Tunes, which was really a lousy version of iTunes. In October of 2016, Amazon bought it, and the digital right to Garth Brooks' catalog, which is why you can hear High Friends in Low Places now on Amazon Music.
Hooray.
For those, and The Rodeo. We play that song about once a year here at the radio station when it's, surprise, rodeo time.
Yeah.
Right. Alan, you got something?
You heard of Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't sure. Bitcoin actually has gotten a little bit too big for its own britches. The way that cryptocurrency kind of works is that the whole thing, all of its transactions are recorded in one big, call it a blockchain, which is also what actually is what you solve problems for in order to distribute the bits of Bitcoin mm-hmm. out to people.
Okay.
But the way the whole thing's structured is that on the blockchain to record what Bitcoins are going where, it can only record 1 megabyte of information every 10 minutes, which is just not enough to keep up with the current demand for Bitcoin transactions.
So it has a built-in circuit breaker, sort of?
Kind
of,
yeah. It's just the limitation of what the blockchain's capable of.
Okay.
So it's started to having to slow the process of transactions, you know, to push them out to, like, less active times. But anyway, they've actually gotten to splitting Bitcoin, and now they've opened up a new one. They call it Bitcoin Cash, which is totally not confusing in any way.
Yeah.
But it has a lot bigger memory in its blockchain of 8 megabytes that's able to be recorded every 10 minutes.
Cash is in, not cash like C-A-S-H, isn't C-A-C-H-E?
C-A-S-H.
Yeah.
Bitcoin Cash. Oh. Yep, yeah. Like the monies.
Though it's still electric money, it is called cash.
Right, it's another block, it's another, you know.
I thought maybe it was a collection point, you know, a bunch of it, hence a cache of...
Nope.
Collection.
So, the other day, the first Bitcoin Cash particle, I suppose, was mined. And it was recorded and it has started trading for about $400 per. It's just a new way to get Bitcoin, essentially. Regular Bitcoins are trading for about $2,700 as opposed to, you know, Bitcoin Cash is $400.
Okay. Now, help me out here. Now, we had this story about the graphics processors, which are in themselves very powerful.
Bitcoin miners. Yep.
Yeah. But now, if you are mining and you're trying all these combos, is this sort of like randomly spinning the dial on a safe and hoping that it will pop open and you'll collect some money out of it?
No, it's more and more advanced, just arithmetic problems, really.
Yeah, but what is the benefit if you solve the problem?
You get a Bitcoin.
Okay, so you are literally mining for it like gold. So
yeah.
But as it is right now, the time and energy it takes to solve the problem will cost more.
Not quite. Since it's still pretty fresh, it's going to be a little bit easier to get Bitcoin Cash out of the block.
All right, but help me out here. If you are mining and you find a Bitcoin, that has to take it out of some pool, doesn't it?
No.
You've created it out of nothing.
Well, like, the chain... The algorithm chain for these cryptocurrencies is essentially infinite long. And the more problems that are solved, the more come out of it. So
we're back to the room full of monkeys.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, the infinite number of monkeys, one of them turns out Shakespeare.
Right, so all these cryptocurrencies follow a similar type of thing where there's X number of solutions or... there's you just figure out solutions to these problems to extend the block, the cryptocurrency block,
all right,
to get more coins
so
out of it.
So when you buy a Bitcoin to, say, pay off the ransomware,
okay,
you go to an exchange and you give them real dollars and you get in return X number of Bitcoins, which are what, currently close to $1,000 per Bitcoin.
Right, which you would get partial Bitcoins out of those. Mm. If you were, most people would only deal in partial Bitcoins, like 0.02 or whatever.
I like the name Ethereum because it is pretty ethereal.
All of them are.
Very ethereal.
But you can, if you have enough horsepower, create these things.
Essentially, yeah. Mm. You're solving problems for the block, which will in return reward you with Bitcoin.
Yeah, pay you Bitcoins.
That is generated upon solving these problems.
Hmm. If it, but so as computing power becomes cheaper, this stuff will become vulnerable, won't it? Because once everybody starts making them, they become essentially worthless.
Maybe. Depends. I mean, you know, regular governments print money like crazy, and that still has value up to a point. But yeah, I mean, it'll eventually probably tap out. But if it's still being more and more traded, then it's still going to be harder and harder to generate new ones.
Hmm. Okie dokie. Brenda.
But essentially, there's Bitcoin Cash now, which is different than Bitcoin, but they're related. And so now there's different things available.
Did you have another story?
I do not.
Oh, you don't. Okay. Now, we've all heard this one, AI-assisted marketing. Customer service is one of the jobs that is definitely at risk of being taken out by machine learning systems. Now, we've all dealt with the call system. When you call a big company anymore, you are talking to a machine learning system that listens to what you say, in theory, and tries its best to keep you from actually reaching
a human being.
Talking
to a person, yes. they repeatedly ask you for refinements, and I just get, say, customer service agent. I just keep repeatedly saying that.
Artificially intelligent systems are in the race against human marketers to successfully plan an effective e-commerce digital marketing strategy. Well, okay, but it looks like these systems are getting sophisticated enough at selling us stuff. I don't know. When I get a sales call on the phone, I can't hang
it's
up past
it. Yeah, it's like press 9 to take me off your list.
Yeah. I get calls from a pharmacy all the time. As soon as I hear the tone of a generally Indian-speaking person, I immediately hang up.
Yeah.
A pharmacy.
What are they trying to
online
sell you?
Online pharmacy. Generally Viagra.
Oh,
they start off
gosh
with that, too, which is great. And like, no, click.
I would laugh my pants off if I got that call. That would be highly amusing.
I'm going to buy.
I need Viagra.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm going to buy any medication, anything that I'm going to put into my body from an anonymous voice on the telephone. Right.
People get, you know, surgeries from back alley doctors all the time, so it's not that surprising.
Apparently it works because they
still call me. They cost them money to do that, so they're making money somehow.
They're still in business and they're still out there doing that, so they must be get some business,
unfortunately.
So is a real interesting article here in TechCo, which is one, if you want to follow the story, it's on the Boomer Tech Radio magazine, which is on Flipboard, talking about marketing robots. Now, of course, marketing robots are, quote, multi-purpose manipulators that are auto-controlled and reprogrammable, which are able to be programmed in at least three axes. So, all right. When I think of a marketing robot, I think of a robot that's trying to sell me something. So I'm not exactly sure. In order to qualify as a robot, two main qualities must be present, a mechanical component and certain levels of intelligence. Well, it depends on how you define mechanical component.
Right.
But AI-assisted marketing, now I can see where they're going to be used to pre-screened callers, which they're already doing when they're trying to keep from having to pay a human being to answer customer service. But help desks that are based on AI rather than having a person there, boy, they must be shuddering in their boots in India.
Yeah.
But we've all talked to people in customer service, and they're obviously flipping through the pages of a book.
I know. That's the
why don't you just give me the book and I'll look it up?
Yep. Those really inspire confidence. Whenever I get one of those with a computer help desk, I'll say thank you very much and call back later, 15 minutes later, and get another person to help
me. My favorite time like that was when I called into a help desk and told them exactly what my problem was, and it took them, a really long time to eventually whittle it down.
Was.
And they even sent somebody up. My computer was blocked from the internet, and they sent somebody up and plugged their computer into it and said it works just fine. I'm like, my computer's blocked, not yours. But it was a mess. Mm.
That's pretty funny.
So we talked about, speaking of artificial intelligence and when it doesn't work right, the tragic loss... The tragic loss of Steve, the security guard robot who ended up taking a swim.
He was hot.
Yes. On his first day of work, of course, he was greeted warmly. Some people took selfies of him. Then he found a fountain, and that was the end of Steve. Steve's mishap, of course, set off a flurry of reaction on social media, some saying the robot had drowned or committed suicide, ha, ha, ha.
That's putting a little too much personification on it.
We tend to anthropomorphize. Yeah, thank you. give human characteristics to inanimate and animal objects. We have done that just about forever. Now, of course,
putting little happy faces on clouds that 2-year-olds do. That's anthropomorphization.
The security robots are still a popular idea with some companies. Robots have 360-degree camera, thermal imaging, license plate recognition, directional microphones, and other technology. They are there to observe and report. The Nightscope 5-foot-tall K5 robot and the smaller K3 robots are basically extra eyes and ears and possibly targets for skateboarders. More companies are coming into the field with these security robots, which are kind of, they make them look very non-threatening. Now, personally, I think if they made them look like a Dalek, they would be far more effective.
Exterminate!
Steve already looks a little bit like one.
That's true. Yeah, does. He just needs
he does
some,
look a bit like a Dalek.
Needs some bumps on him to look like a Dalek.
He needs the suction cup in the ray gun. Cooper Tech Radio on the bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back after this.
Exterminate!
Back for one final segment of Boomer Tech Radio. The theme music you hear is, of course, composed and performed by George Wood. It's called 8-Bit Junkie, used by permission off of the PodSafe Music Network. Boomer Tech Radio produced by Belongi Entertainment Enterprises, and you can go to www.boomertechradio.com to find show notes and download information, including various places to get this show. So, did you know that tape drives are still very much used in business, Alan? You work for a company. Do they have tape drive backup systems?
Yeah, they do backups regularly for our POS system. That's not the usual version for POS. It's point of sale in this instance.
It's not the first words that came to my mind.
Yeah. According to the Next Web, a new palm-sized cartridge that Sony and IBM have developed will store 330 terabytes of data onto a cartridge roughly the size of your palm using a new technique for magnetic tape. The tape features a recording density of 201 gigabytes per square inch, 20 times the current capabilities. To put that into perspective, all of Wikipedia times 3,379, all of Wikipedia's data could fit 3,000 times onto one data cartridge.
And 60 years ago, when these little tape drives were first invented, and the same half-inch wide segment that can hold 201 gigabytes now used to hold 2 megabytes.
Yeah, so we don't think about tape very much. We think about, of course, flash drive and things like that, but stored properly, tape drives will last a very, very long time.
Sure.
In an environmentally controlled area and all that.
The data is stored in what's called a sputtered medium across multiple layers of nanoparticles across a tape length. IBM notes a breakthrough means it will be possible to double tape storage capacity every 2 years for a decade to come. Of course, that just means bigger and bigger databases.
Well, they also have that DNA data storage system that they're looking into or something like that, aren't they?
Yeah.
How to get more bits and pieces in a smaller space. Yeah.
This week, the woman who was convicted in the involuntary manslaughter case where she egged on her boyfriend into committing suicide has been sentenced.
Sick.
Now, because she was technically a juvenile at the time she committed the offense, she was only sentenced to 15 months. Prosecutors had pressed for 7 to 15 years. The hundreds of Carter's text messages presented as evidence convinced the court of her guilt. The case was hinged on intimate cell phone exchanges between the defendant, Michelle Carter, and her 18-year-old boyfriend. Definitely, the law wasn't even really caught up with this case yet. You know, essentially, they are charging her with a crime of just tapping out, but the defense said that there were no laws on the books to cover this form of basically urging someone to kill themselves, but they did find legal precedent to convict her.
And it's that leads to kind of an interesting and slightly worrying precedent for other things. If you can be held liable for suggesting or even urging somebody to do something, like if you urge somebody to buy this house or whatever, and you were really insistent upon it, and they eventually did end up buying it and losing money on it, are you financially liable for their bad purchase?
Wait until you buy a house. You want to see disclaimer forms on every possible thing. Am I right, Brenda? The disclaimer forms you have to sign when you buy a house from a realtor?
Or, well, anything like that, any sort of investment. Could that person be financially liable for urging or
mostly
something like that?
Disclosures. It's the disclosures that are just.
The case could spur Massachusetts legislature to pass a law that makes it a crime to engage in coercing or encouraging suicide. So that's already a law in some 40 other states. Yeah. The 18-year-old victim poisoned himself by inhaling carbon monoxide in the truck in his vehicle.
It's really sad. I mean, this whole thing is sad. No one wins or.
No, she's an awful human being.
I suspect that it's a very young person who, crime of passion type of thing, and her life is messed up for rest of her life.
It was a crime of non-passion because she just didn't care whatsoever.
Well, no empathy, no connection, and so there were problems there to begin with. But the whole situation is sad. She's, disconnected. This young man is dead. Everybody's family's upset all the way around. Let's hope that the guilty party really straightens up. That's just really, really sad.
According to an article in the Washington Times, now robots are not the end of work, and of course, the people who are decrying the rise of the robots and the end of civilization and Terminators will be running down the street, gunning down everything inside, et cetera, are generally not robotics experts. We've mentioned that on this show. And robots filling orders for Amazon and apps planning business trips don't really mean the end of employment. We're not going to have, the whole population standing around with their hands in their pockets. Now, alarmists say, look at what happened to elevator operators. What about bowling alley pin setters?
Yes.
Artificial intelligence is now replacing knowledge workers, insurance adjusters, financial advisors, even legal advisors. The fair society will divide between people owning intellectual property and the people who depend on government handouts. Now, of course, we also have the example of the farmer. This, according to an article in the, as I said, the Washington Times. Since ancient civilizations, humans have planted and harvested. Now, of course, at first it was done strictly by hand. Then we had horse-drawn plows.
Yeah,
then we had steam engines, modern tractors, tillers, harvested. And so we have created more and more production from X number of land and X amount of effort.
And today we have GPS-driven automated, autonomous, whatever, mm-hmm. semi-autonomous harvesting equipment. You no longer have to have a human driving the machine.
Right, and that is only going to keep improving. Now, of course, this puts the family farm being replaced by a corporate-owned farm, which is very heavily profit-driven, but farmers are profit-driven, too.
Only to some extent. It depends on what's being grown and that sort of thing. But in terms of feeding the masses, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, AI isn't going to replace doctors, but it will permit them to treat more patients effectively and help them keep up with changing technologies.
Right,
and, of course, we've already had computer-assisted surgery, which could not be accomplished with a human hand. Under the guidance of a doctor, very, very fine surgeries. Very, very minute areas of involvement.
Tiny things done at tiny places.
Like eye surgery, for the most part, the corrective surgery, that's mostly a computer. The dude pays attention to it, the optometrist, but he's not the one moving the laser around.
Right. Now, the article here, like I said, the Washington Times says, high school students are ill-prepared to either enter demanding vocational or apprenticeship programs or enroll in college curriculum for engineering and the like. Now, there's always going to be a call for small output type specialized work. There's going to be a resurgence, I think, of craftsman type work.
Customers. Trades.
Yeah, craftsman trades that simply there isn't enough of to warrant building an automated system for.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, you're going to need a dude to come out to fix your pipes. You're going to need a plumber to come out and do it because it's going to be really difficult
every
to
house
automate
is different.
Something like that. So,
anyway, so, you know, we have people like Musk who are saying the government needs to regulate AI and essentially put a stop on progress. Facebook says we should just surrender and give up having personal privacy and personal privacy or an expectation of privacy, that all our information should be just out there for the exploitation. So, you know, that's kind of an extreme view.
Yeah.
But personal privacy, and I think more and more people, you know, they took writing and script out of the schools. I think that's going to make a comeback, just as vinyl records made a comeback.
Either that or there's going to be an AI that recognizes script, so you don't really have to learn it.
Yeah, but I, you know, if you just want to baffle, you know, some of these kids just coming out of high school these days, you just write something in cursive.
I think most people can read cursive. It's just writing. It's the thing.
Mm. The Galaxy 8, if you own a Galaxy 8, you might be able to dip your toe into virtual reality with the Daydream VR. They are coming out, Google had promised this thing earlier this year. Now, Google, of course, was pushing VR out on the Pixel, but it didn't catch on. Now they're building a system that is compatible with Samsung. Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus users could use VR apps with Samsung and Oculus Rift's 129-gear VR, but now you can try the $79 Daydream View, which has its own set of apps. Now, the big thing I'm hearing about VR goggles using a smartphone, good, but there's not enough resolution on the smartphone screen to, when you split it in half, really give you a good user experience.
And they're, like, right next to your eyeballs, so it's not that great of a yeah, the the pixel density is just not that great when it's that close to your eyes.
Right, right. We're going to have to really, even if you have something along the lines of a retina display, they're going to have to pack a lot more pixels into a smaller area. And what is that light at that proximity to your retina doing to your retina? We don't know
yet. You have to wonder, yeah.
Let's see here. Companies, according now the Motley Fool is a company that does it's an investment company, mm-hmm. or it's an investment advisory company. They've been in this for quite a while. They have an article called Three Companies Building the World of Tomorrow. And interesting, these companies are, Tesla.
Pretty safe bet there.
iRobot and Intuitive Surgical. Now, iRobot, of course, right now their claim to fame is the Roomba, but they really, they got right in there with an ideal, very catchy and known to nerds name. iRobot, of course, derived from the series by Isaac Asimov, yes. One of the greatest science fiction writers ever.
I thought it was based on that Will Smith movie. No?
They're still harnessing the residual energy from Isaac Asimov spinning in his grave when that thing came out. The movie with Will Smith bears not even the faintest resemblance to the books.
Well, it's got a robot. It's got dudes. That's enough, right? Yeah.
A few of the characters are named similarly, but the plot is completely different. And it is good classic science fiction reading. I would like to see, in fact, Harlan Ellison wrote a screenplay based very closely on the book, but it never saw the light of day.
Good stuff, that book.
Yeah. It really inspired a lot of people.
I might have to go reread them now.
Yeah, might have to. iRobot is now along with the Roomba. They now have a floor cleaner, the Brava and Brava 2. And, of course, they're building a percentage in Asia. Hardwood floors, of course, are more prevalent there. And they are also designing a robotic lawnmower, which you'll be able to turn loose out on the lawn, and it will learn your lawn and stay within the confines.
Automated spinning
blades. We
did a
story on that too long ago when the moose stomped the moose or the deer. I think it was a moose stomped the Roomba. Didn't particularly care for it.
Dang Roomba!
The Roomba lawnmower.
Well, geez, giant spinning blades of death, though. I mean, controlled by a little robot. That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, it was absolutely no match for the moose.
Not a lot of things are, really.
Article in CNN, and we talked about this last hour. The senators who want to make smart gadgets more secure, we talked about this with that FBI article that Brenda led the show with, a bipartisan group introduced a bill this week to address concerns regarding the Internet of Things. It would require any companies that provide the federal government with Internet-enabled devices to meet basic security requirements. Well, gee.
You think?
There was a great cartoon on Facebook. It said, it was a split cartoon, and it said 60s. Had this woman in a very 60s outfit. She's holding up a telephone. She says, I better not say that because the government might be wiretapping my phone. The next frame is a modern-day house, and the woman's going, wiretap, do you have a barbecue recipe? We're talking to an Amazon Echo.
Echo.
So we've let these things.
Whenever we talk about random things on Skype with my friends and stuff, we're like, well, that's on somebody's FBI database now.
Well, when it was turned out that the FBI was monitoring a lot of emails, there was a big push in social media to spam emails to all your friends with nothing but the word pressure cooker.
Yes, yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
just a minute. In fact, there was a whole list of 100 words that if you incorporated them in an email would light up the red lights.
So you would just make sure to include that in all of your signatures.
And it's like the social engineering. You tell people don't do that.
Oh,
they're
going
to say, oh, yeah? You ain't telling me not to do that.
I will do it 20 times.
Yeah, people are just wired that way.
It was amusing at work. They used to have the End User Support Center or something like that, EUSC. And a big memo comes out and says, you will not call it USUC.
Oh, I'm calling it USAC.
And that's exactly what happened, is that it never occurred to me to do that. But once they said it, it was like, that is so perfect.
Well, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You call attention to these things and they take off.
The bill also is going to require devices to use standard technology protocols. And a lot of companies, have, like the toys we talked about at the top of the show, they crank, and the cameras, they crank these things out without any more than just the most rudimentary, easily hacked security protocols, and you're leaving your house wide open. There are stories about baby monitors being hacked and people screaming obscenities over the speaker of the baby monitor just because it's funny. Well, they think it's funny.
Right.
The proposed bill addresses the concern that devices connected to the internet, like cameras, coffee makers, and door locks, could be insecure gateways, not just in and of themselves, but they could also be used to tunnel into a home or business
right.
network and hack information out.
That or use that's connected to something else. It's connected to something else, and it provides an avenue for that.
And vulnerable devices can have their programming rewritten to do things like create botnets, which are essentially an attack device. You create a whole bunch of devices to sign into one website all at the same time and overwhelm it and shut it down. And
right.
it's called a DDoS attack. Distributed denial of service.
Not fun.
Yeah, last year there was a big cyber attack that turned vulnerable security cameras into a botnet that took down Netflix, Twitter, and a couple other sites. The so-called Mirai attack motivated the drafting of the bill because it revealed how insecure smart devices can cause real harm. So we're in the very early stages of this stuff, but these companies are, in order to save a few cents per unit, have really left themselves open and vulnerable.
I'm hoping, but probably won't happen, that consumers just eventually stop buying things that don't have their own security, but I get the feeling that they're going to be forced to anyway.
Right. But if, say, there's a big concern about medical devices that are connected to the internet, and if somebody who really has a malicious intent and just likes to cause problems gets in there and, let's say, starts turning off pacemakers...
That would be evil.
Yeah, well, there are
Why
evil
would your
people.
Pacemaker be attached to wireless anyway? That just seems
it
like
is.
A terrible idea.
It does.
Well, it does have to transfer data back to the medical professionals.
Well, that's how they control it.
But it's
it.
Not
Otherwise,
secure.
They have to carve you open every time to adjust it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so there has to be a protocol to get in there, because this thing is implanted because somebody we know came very close to having one of these things stuck inside them. And I guess the healing time for a pacemaker is...
You're like incapacitated for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a little wire and a port come out of my armpit or something.
2.5 months or something like that.
But,
well, that could be arranged, too. I'm sure.
Among the products being... floated on the market right now and are potentially hackable would be an insulin pump that reports back to the doctor, monitors your glucose levels in real time, and if it senses a problem, actually transmits back to the doctor. But if it is not a secure device, imagine the havoc that could be wreaked by malicious people. Could a murder be committed in this fashion? Well, there is a very forgettable movie that was somewhat ahead of its time. That did touch on that. I can't remember the actresses in it now. You know what? I'll think of it as soon as we sign off the air. Anyway, the upshot of the story was that she had run afoul of some government agency, and they were doing things like causing planes to crash, and a friend of hers who had an implanted device that was connected to, I think it was called the Web. And it was an 80s movie and had a lot of very bad science and bad technology in it. One of her acquaintances was murdered in this fashion. They like fired up his insulin pump or something.
Hmm.
And now we are getting there.
Well, vehicles, too.
Yep. Yeah, could do.
Run your car, automated car off the road.
In fact, there was a Doctor Who episode that had all the cars had this device on them, and they would lock the doors and smash into things, so. But of course, that's Hollywood.
The net,
yes. Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock was in it.
Fun.
The Web was a 1947 crime movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I knew it was something like that. Yeah, Sandra Bullock, The Net. And what year did that come out?
94, it looks like.
1995.
Yeah, so the internet was very much in its infancy.
Got 6 stars out of 10.
Hmm.
Not great.
But it did. It was sort of prescient in some of these things that there is a hazard. Should we be panicked? No. Should we be prudent? Yeah.
Secure your devices.
Yes.
In general.
Yeah. Finally, I wanted to... there was a story about... there was a company making iPhone cases in China that it turned out that the chemicals used to bond the glitter onto the cases were extremely toxic, and people would sweat on these things, and the chemicals would leach to the fabric onto the skin and cause serious burns.
Yeah, wow. That's what you get for buying a glitter case. Well, don't buy glitter cases, guys. Come on.
Why not? Because let me tell you, in a bag, a glitter case will show up.
Yes,
it's true.
It's bright, sparkly, it'll show up. Easier to find.
One final thing.
On the other hand, I always worry about the glitter staying on there.
Or seeping into your skin and causing burns.
Exactly.
One final thing. How many times have they teased us with this? Toyota is claiming a leap that would vastly increase electric car range with a breakthrough in a type of lithium-ion battery system. This has got to be story 100. That we have broken the battery problem.
Still waiting for those batteries that last 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
This sounds to me like the marketing folks forgot to include the engineers in on the discussion.
Yeah. If it is real, and I have my doubts, I'm sorry. We've been teased with this story way too many times to fall for it. It would make Toyota a world leader, because if you come up with a super efficient battery that doesn't cost a fortune or spew toxic chemicals everywhere, you're going to revolutionize technology. That's all the time we've got for this episode of Boomer Tech Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Bob and Brendan Allen saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other.